Welcome, horse lovers. You're listening to the Heart Horse Podcast.
Coming to you from the Heart Horse headquarters in Los Angeles, California, with your hosts, Charlotte and Tista.
On today's episode, we are talking about horse professionals, how to find them, challenges in that, all those things. Charlotte.
Hi, Tista.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. We're surrounded by my cats at the moment, so if you hear some little mews and things, that's what's happening.
Yeah, we're recording in Charlotte's bedroom today because our office is, we share it with her partner who's a musician, and she's teaching in there, so we chose cats over background guitar strumming for you guys today.
We'll find out which one was the right choice right at the end.
Well, today we wanted to talk about professionals in the horse world, especially professionals in relation to us as horse owners and our experience with that. Yesterday in our mastermind meeting with our herd, one of our members brought up an issue she's having with a farrier. So she is in an area where it's more remote, so there's not as many professionals to choose from, and her horse needs something very kind of specific and is going through some issues. So her problem is that the person she has now isn't exactly doing what she's hoped he could do to help her horse. And she's found this other person but they're far away. She doesn't have her own trailer to them. And then she's worried, you know, if I go to this other person who seems like they could help my horse, is now the farrier I used before going to get angry or not, you know, want to be hired by me again if I actually do end up meeting him again?
Oh, I have so much sympathy for her in that position. And I feel lucky that we are in a place where there's a lot of professionals to choose from. But I think even if that's the case, whether you have little resources or many resources, you can run into the same problems with professionals no matter what. And like being a caretaker of a horse inevitably means you're going to be working with many professionals.
Absolutely.
More so than with any other animal that's ever been in my life.
Yeah, for me too. I'm trying to think, like, is there any animal that would probably have so many? And I'm like, I don't think so. But yeah, for horses. So, I mean, of course, you know, every 6 weeks or every 4 weeks or whatever it is, you know, your horse has to have their feet trimmed or shod. Mm-hmm. So you have a farrier constantly in our lives. Those are probably the professionals that we interact with the most for just basic horse owners. And then, you have your vet, which you at least see probably once a year for teeth floating or vaccinations, and maybe you even see an equine dentist for that. Then what do we have? Chiropractors, osteopaths, massage therapists, kinesiologists, like just body workers alone. There's so many different kinds of body working professionals. Horse trainers, horse transporters, and then can you think of any just directly related to horses? Because then there's all the like saddle makers and like all that too, which is like a whole nother realm.
There's so many people that could weigh in, and even just like your barn managers. Like you have to negotiate with so many people and make a lot of, you know, either small or huge compromises all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's hard when I think Charlotte and I, you know, we can only ever speak to our experience on this podcast. That's what we draw a lot from. But, you know, growing up as like young women and now, you know, still like relatively young women, it can be really challenging to have other people take you seriously. Like, I know that's been a challenge with me with certain horse professionals, is that, you know, they've viewed me as less than because of my youth and I think also because being a woman, though, I haven't been anything else, so I couldn't really say, but.
Yeah, I absolutely think you're right on that. And, you know, it's hard enough. We've spoken before about the challenges that come with even just feeling legitimized in your passion for horses, and that it is more than just a hobby.
Yeah.
And then sometimes even when you're, you know, declaring how much you are invested by, you know, calling a professional and doing right by your horse and seeking someone out, and you're being really responsible in doing that.
Yeah.
And then to bring that person in and have them make you feel small too is really a bummer.
So frustrating. It's so frustrating. Yeah. And just like the lack of communication that can happen there and the misunderstandings that can lead to and just conflict it can lead to.
Oh my gosh. And I know our herd member that was sharing with us yesterday in our mastermind. Sorry, my cats are now
fighting
something. So yeah, when she was talking about the situation she was in, one of the things that really struck me was that the person she's working with looks down upon people who do their own research,
right,
about horse hooves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I totally imagine that as a professional, it can be really frustrating to have clients who think they know better than you and want to tell you how to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a pretty good relationship with our farrier, and she shared with us that there's certain clients she'll go to and they'll talk to her and be like, well, I want it done this way. I want it like this, da, da, da. And she knows that that's not what's actually going to be best for that horse from her professional experience and her education. But because she's in the position of, this is my client, she has to say, okay, uh-huh, and do it that way, you know, when that's not necessarily the best thing for the animal. So I totally get that. I think that's, professionals have a really hard job too in how they deal with clients, especially clients who, yeah, don't do thorough research and then come with a lot of demands, right? But yeah, I see it the other way of professionals looking at their clients as know-nothings and as, just not honoring the kind of, you know, wisdom that a horse owner can bring to the situation too.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, for us, where we're at, luckily, is that the professionals we seek out and the professionals we do get to work with, for the most part, are much more coming from a space of collaboration and are curious about what we've been experiencing with our horses and curious about our insights and mm-hmm. what we're picking up on. And also they feel comfortable disagreeing or telling us something else that they're noticing. Mm-hmm. And so even if we do come with our own outside research and it's not what they think is the right thing, they're going to explain to us why.
Right. Yeah. And that's so important. The taking that next step and being like, okay, but this is why I do what I do and my understanding of it. And then someone who's open to saying like, I haven't heard that before, but I'll look into it as well. You know, yes. Or being like, that's really interesting that you bring up that point. In my experience, it hasn't been that way. Just even the way that someone talks to you makes such a huge difference.
Hugely so. And you saying that made me think about how our farrier, you know, went out of her way and took her own time in between sessions with my horse to research things she didn't know that could help her. And she mm-hmm. was like, you know what? I haven't encountered this before. I'm going to look this up. I'm determined to figure this out.
Yeah.
And she reached out to her colleagues and her mentors, and she did figure it out. And that, I have so much respect and trust for her and so much appreciation for her clear passion for her job and her care for the horses that she would, you know, take her time that I'm not paying her for.
Yeah.
To choose to like deepen her understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So for you growing up, we were talking about this a little bit before we came on the podcast. You were saying that you really didn't have an idea of what it meant to hire professionals because you were at training barns and it was always the trainer who would take care of everything for you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's so, so different. And it's interesting to think back on, and there's not that many people I know right now that can relate to this. And for me, absolutely. Like there was, even from the time I was young, there was like a vet that already came to the barn, mm-hmm. a farrier that came to the barn. Like I didn't have to make those appointments and began because I was, you know, under 10 years old. I'm not making these appointments. But even as I grew older, and it almost became even more removed when I was older and even more competitive and in these more serious programs. You know, I remember when I was younger, I definitely felt close to my vet and really loved her and looked forward to her visits. And I actually can't tell you that the last competitive show jumping horse that I had in my life, I couldn't even tell you one of the names of the farrier, the vet, any of those people
yeah.
that worked with him, the transporters, none of that.
Wow.
Yeah. But it all happened.
Yeah.
I mean, he was definitely in great condition and in all of those regards, but it was so removed that I wouldn't even know necessarily like the day that was going to happen.
Yeah. How do you feel like that impacted your relationship with that horse?
I think now, I think at the time I didn't even consider it. And now that I have had the other experience of being really involved, I can see how many like nuances and how many facets of the relationship I was really missing out on, and better understanding like where he was coming from and what was going on for him physically. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would have loved to have known all of that at the time, but I was in such a different space, and it really had to do with, I think, you know, talking about professionals, like I think you can be, I think it's really valuable to be able to be discerning with professionals and have your own voice. And I was in what I can see now as like a totally toxic relationship where I gave up my voice. Mm-hmm. I didn't even, I would have felt nervous to ask the question, and I would have felt also like embarrassed that I didn't know.
Yeah.
And so instead I would just stay silent and let her be in complete control of my horse and of me.
Yeah. That's really intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's something so important to think about when you are, you know, maybe going to a training barn or any kind of new barn scenario where there's a barn manager or someone who's at the head of things. Because when you choose that trainer or that barn manager or whatever, you choose to interact with them, like you're choosing everyone that they relate to and call on as professionals too. Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating to think about that, you know, there's this whole network of people behind a single person. And just by choosing that one person, you may not even realize how many other people you're choosing to be involved in your horse's care or.
Wow. Yeah. I hadn't even thought about it that way before, but it's so real.
Yeah. It's real. And sometimes it's nice. I mean, gosh, there's so many times where I'm like, I just want someone to tell me what to do.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Make appointments for me.
Looking back, there's definitely like a spoiled aspect of being like, my horse is completely taken care of and all I need to do is show up and love him and brush him and do whatever. But yeah, I think that there is so much that keeps you also in the dark. And then, you know, I also had no idea how he was interacting with those professionals or what the experiences he was having with them were. So, you know, if he had a negative experience with the vet and then I went to ride him later that day, like I wouldn't have necessarily known that.
Yeah.
I might have, you know, had less patience for him because I'm like, why are you upset about this?
Totally.
We're just having a normal day. And because I just didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's so important. I mean, there, of course, there's going to be situations or times in your life where you won't be able to be at that appointment, whether it's because it's an emergency mm-hmm. or because you're out of town or whatever. But like, if you can't be there, which I think as horse owners, it's our responsibility to advocate for our horses. That means being at appointments where other people are dealing with them and handling them. If you can't, then having like someone you trust, like a close friend or mm-hmm. if you have a trainer that you really trust to be there in your place. But I'm amazed how many people like, have these, appointments and don't like our fair says all the time mm-hmm. that a lot of horses she does that owners aren't there.
That blows my mind. I always, when she says that, like she'll literally go out into the pasture and catch the horse herself and bring them in and do the whole thing and then put them back without anyone else being there.
Yeah.
Not, and they're lucky that she's an amazing, trustworthy person, but you know, anything, I would think just for her sake, it would be nice for someone else to be there.
Totally. Yeah.
I think that's agree. Asking a lot of
that
professional.
I think it's
putting her
a little bit in danger. I know. Yeah, totally. And I used to do that with Juno when she was at my family's house back in the day. I had a farrier who I trusted. I stood with her a few times back then. Juno was, you know, really good about just putting the cross ties and you can do what you need to do. But I remember one time that I came at the end of the appointment, I got home and he's like, oh, you know, she broke the cross tie, she pulled back. I'm like, oh, like that's weird. She's never done that before. But just like that, like who knows what could have happened.
Right.
And it's less, yeah. I mean, now that's not a choice I would make unless it's something a choice I had to make for a particular reason. Mm-hmm. I think it's best for your horse and best for the professional involved too, that if you should be there, you know, mm-hmm. for those kinds of appointments. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Totally. Yeah. If nothing else, like to be able to ask questions and understand why things are going the way they're going. And, you know, especially in terms of like fostering good relationships with a professional, you know, you want to see what you can work on. Like, I really am so interested when we have farrier appointments that aren't easy for Salem and I, but being able to witness it and be present for it, I can see what I can work on the in-between. What are the hardest parts for her?
Yeah.
You know, so you're actually making the progress that's helping everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's so important. And something too with professionals is that, you know, they can act, I don't know, they can act differently with different clients.
Mm-hmm.
So there was once a situation I was in where I was holding someone else's horses for them for the farrier appointment. And it started to go in a way I was really not comfortable with. Like, he was treating the horse in a way that was really upsetting to me. And I feel like now I would have been able to step out of the situation, but especially because I was on someone else's property, it was someone else's horses, and they had asked me to do this. I just felt like I just have to do it and get it done, and this is horrible and it sucks. And I was like near tears in the during the thing. But yeah, I talked to the owner of those horses after, and they were like, God, like, he's never acted that way around me when I'm standing with him when he's shoeing other horses. So,
mm-hmm.
So that was really interesting to hear that that person felt comfortable to act around me in a way they didn't in front of the owner. And so that's really enlightening too, is that, you know, just, I don't know, being mindful of that, that, you know, people's behavior can change based on what they see as your expectation, and also set that expectation. You know, I think part of that reason that he acted in a particular way around her is because she set a boundary really quick with him and was very like direct about how she wanted her horses treated. Of course, he should treat all the horses that way, even when she's not around.
Yeah.
But when she was around, he didn't behave that way. So another reason to always be there.
That's so intense.
It's sad. And I hate that. And I hate that like those kinds of situations, reflect on other professionals or make you more worried about that. But it does happen. And there's a lot of like really rough handlers out there. There's a lot of professionals who will not hesitate to mistreat a horse.
So. Yeah. And, you know, I think that really brings up, and I think we can all relate to that feeling, like even when you do pick a professional, no matter how, like how much conviction or, you know, stability in your own thoughts and beliefs going into it can be in the moment. Sometimes it's really hard not to feel like you do need to let them be in control, even when they are doing something that you believe is not right.
Yeah.
It's really hard in those moments. And, I think that's something as a caretaker for horses that, like I didn't anticipate, and it can make you feel really bad about yourself afterwards.
Totally.
Like you're saying, like you felt so upset, and I think that makes so much sense. And you can just, you know, kick yourself after, like, why didn't I say something?
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. And I've had that happen with Juno before in really severe ways where I was sobbing after an appointment with a farrier one time because of the way he treated her. And I just froze because I was so shocked by what was happening. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't stop it in the moment. And I think I was younger then, but I was just so shocked and felt so like disempowered. And also, which is such a horrible position to be in, also felt like, well, she has to get her feet done, so I'm just going to let this happen.
Right.
When like he messed up her feet beyond just acting horrifically in the appointment. But yeah, I mean, I feel like if you are feeling that way going into a thing, like I have no other option, I have no other choice, that's a really disempowered place to be in.
Yeah, it's horrible.
When you're dealing with a professional. And sometimes that is quite literally the fact and the truth. But then I would say, like, if you're in that situation, you're going in and you're not sure about how this other person might behave, to have like other people with you as backup to like help support you in case something does go awry.
Yeah.
Because yeah, it can be really hard to be the only person trying to like keep a boundary or navigate that situation.
Absolutely. And I think that's super advice and something we've brought up in the past, is the idea of like bringing a friend or bring your partner, or like, you know, especially as a woman in the world, like I think that these things can surprise you how they might come up emotionally for you, especially in a situation where, you know, you're seeing, seeing a man mistreat this horse that you're protective of, but like you don't feel like you can say something. And I think as much as we can say, like, you know, be the advocate for your horse, like we can't remove the fact that we're having an experience too.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, like, you should feel totally confident saying and setting whatever boundary you need to, both for yourself and your horse. But I think there's so much more going on, and we can simplify it, but it's at times a lot deeper. And mm-hmm. so, you know, allow, you know, you don't have to be flip and just think like, I just need to toughen up about this. You, right. You're allowed to say like, this is actually a really intense experience for me and for my horse. And like, I'm going to really prepare myself ahead of time. I'm going to make sure that I have like, whatever, if you need to have your guy friend be there with you because yeah. your male farrier makes you feel uncomfortable and that's the only option you have, then like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's huge. And, you know, for me personally now, and I know this is not like a choice everyone will be able to make, or, and maybe isn't one that I'll make in the future, now that I feel a little bit more stronger and more settled in what I'm able to, what boundaries I'm able to set. But I decided at one point that I was just not going to hire male farriers anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was so difficult for me to set boundaries with them. And I found patterns of behavior in almost all the male farriers I worked with, that I'll just like compromise like the safety of my horse, I felt like, and her well-being. So since, you know, since my the last time, and by no means have they all been awful. I mean, I've had ones that have been fine. And so, but there's always that little bit of like, like even the best ones, that little bit of feeling like looked down on or not taken seriously and a little bit too rough of handling, mm-hmm. than I could tolerate. So now I very intentionally seek out female hoof care practitioners and farriers. And yeah. Thankfully we live in an area where that's hasn't been hard because there's a lot in our area, but yeah, it's just, you know, it's just a choice I had to make, but I'm like, you know, I probably to set myself up for success. I know that I will have better chances of a good working relationship with a woman than mm-hmm. a man in this case. So mm-hmm. yeah, just having to decide on that,
mm-hmm. which is funny. And that's really going to be individual for each person, because in some ways, like, I, you know, as a woman, I can really identify with that experience. And so for me, you know, and not talking about our farrier at all, but, you know, actually thinking specifically about one of the vet techs mm-hmm. that we know, who I think she is too rough. And, that almost is harder for me to say something, because I do feel at this point I have found my voice from, like, you know, I don't know, working the merch table at a ton of venues all over the world. I feel like I can stand up to most people in the moment, but I have a way harder time telling a woman that, like, she's doing something wrong, because I feel like there's so much. I mean, everyone's experience is hard, but I'm always like, oh, they're probably so tough because they felt like they had to be. Whereas like, yeah. if a guy is, I'll be like, don't, you know, I don't know. And not to make this certainly is the conversation is not all about gendering or everybody, but I don't know. I just hadn't thought about that before.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, when you're looking for a professional to work with when it comes to your horse's care, it's so important to do all these steps before it gets to the point where you're in a working relationship with someone where you have to tell them no,
yes.
right? So yeah, some of the things like I look for when I'm hiring a new professional is how can I talk to them? Like, do I feel comfortable talking to them on the phone? Like, will they take their time to talk to me on the phone first and like share what, you know, their viewpoint is about horses and share their background, their experience, that kind of thing? And also, in the beginning of appointments or when I'm on the phone or something like that, which, you know, I learned the hard way, I'll explain that I like my horse handled in a certain way. And I don't have to go into a lot of detail about that, but I usually say, like, I don't use, like, a lot of punishment with my horse. Like, I like to not cause her excess stress. Like, if I need to end the appointment, like, is that okay with you? And if they say no at that point, then, like, I'm not obviously not going to hire them.
Right.
So just, like, having that conversation ahead of time and getting a feel for who they are and just feeling comfortable to just talk to them is mm-hmm. so huge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I do think it's really important for us to, yeah, not rely on other people to make those appointments for us. Even if it's, like, you're at a barn and it's, like, the equine dentist is coming that day and we're doing a dental clinic and everyone sign up. Like, you can still sign up and all that, but, like, still call that equine dentist, right? Or look into them or ask people about them. Mm-hmm. And then have a conversation with them before they get started. Yeah. So you're not in having to, because having to deal with this stuff when you're in the moment is so unbelievably hard. So like everything you can do to make sure you've hired someone who's qualified, who's kind, who's going to listen to you, and, you know, who's going to make the experience like,
oh my gosh, this is such brilliant advice. And I wish I had had that when I was younger. And in so many scenarios, like, yeah, with that trainer that I had, it was like, when I really think back on it, did I feel comfortable having a conversation? No, I always felt like I was like kowtowing, and I literally felt like I couldn't ask questions, mm-hmm. and that I was just supposed to like receive information, not Absolutely. Think for myself. And I can also, you know, this isn't horses, but I relate to that when I realized that, you know, therapists are just people too. Like you have to like date around, you don't not, you know, I definitely also probably because of that other relationship for a long time would be like, okay, well, like if this person has this title or this degree or whatever, then therefore they know more than I do.
Totally.
And they know better for me than I do.
Yeah.
And it's really, it takes a lot of work to like get the power back.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And because it comes from a good place, I think ultimately, like in you and
right.
I feel for me, like we have a respect for elders.
Yeah.
We have a respect for people who have gone through a particular education that qualifies mm-hmm. them. You know, mm-hmm. we have respect for that. So, mm-hmm. but sometimes that does translate into, yeah, being kind of disempowered and not feeling like, you know, I think I was listening to a podcast with, I was with Nashawn Cook mm-hmm. and on Warwick Schiller's podcast, and Warwick Schiller asked him, what is leadership? Mm. And I'm going to mess this up. This isn't a direct quote, but he said, leadership is listening. Mm. And I think that's so true. So in our professionals, like you can still respect their, you know, their degree or their education and their status. But if they're a good leader and a professional is a leader, right? Because they are, they should listen to you.
Yes.
You know, and that should be one of their qualifications too.
Absolutely. And like that listening can really expand out even beyond the individual interactions they have. Like I think something you and I really value in professionals, people who are listening to the community at large and mm-hmm. what's needed on a greater scale. And are they participating in the conversations that are meaningful? And are they seeking out to further educate themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because it is an ongoing experience of learning is always ongoing, and like providing care is always like an ongoing thing. So yeah, that's huge. And something I'll say too, though, for, you know, ourselves as the people who are hiring these professionals, I'm definitely guilty of this, of being very entrenched in one way of thinking mm-hmm. and approaching horses mm-hmm. and letting that preempt like judgment on my part about another professional who doesn't completely fit with that ideology, right? Yeah. So I'm super guilty of that. And that's not good to go into it sort of closed-minded and, mm-hmm. and thinking like, kind of like a place of superiority, like, well, mm-hmm. that person does stuff this way or doesn't know about this, so like I can't really fully right. trust anything
or
they
like
say
has
about that.
This adjective in their description or...
Yeah.
If you're looking for a professional... And like we could pick something specific or not, depending on how this sits for you. But yeah. like, if walk me through like you're looking for someone new to work with Juno. Like, mm-hmm. are you going to Google? Are you calling your vet? Are you asking all the professionals you already trust? Mm. Do you go on Instagram?
I have done all of that. For most of the professionals, I tend to rely on referrals.
Yeah.
So either through vets or through other professionals or friends. Mm-hmm. I find referral is a really good way to go because, at least one person can vouch for that person yeah. or has had a good experience. That doesn't mean that you are. Uh-huh. and certainly, you know, I've had referrals from vets where they referred me to a farrier, and he was really nice on the phone, like gave me a lot of advice, but was so difficult to get a hold of, charged me so much, said that he didn't even really have time for me. And when I told that to the vet, he's like, wow, I'm so sorry, like I'm never referring him again, that's bullshit, like, you know. So even when you do get a referral, you have to be careful, because it doesn't mean, and when you have a good experience with someone on the phone, it still doesn't mean that the appointment's gonna go well,
right? Yeah, you might not get the same person yeah. that day.
So I tend to rely on referrals, and I think about what I'm, first of all, I try to get a referral before I really need it. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, we keep talking about fairies because it's one of, you know, the professionals we interact with the most and we constantly need. So like that situation, it's not good to wait until it's week 5 of your horse that's on a 6-week trim cycle to be like, oh wow, I need a farrier now.
Right.
And then to start doing.
Right. Totally.
The work of trying to get that referral.
Right. And like talking about planning far out, like we actually have some body work appointments for our girls later today. And you have had the referral for this person that's going to come for how long?
Like a year.
So
and like I've met her before. I've looked at her Instagram for a long time and I've had other people refer me to her. So
like at this point, she's been like fully vetted.
Yeah. I feel very confident going into the situation. And I got that referral when it wasn't like super needed, like super necessary that I get it.
I think that's a really interesting thing I hadn't thought of too, is like preemptively getting the numbers of everybody, because, you know, we've talked about this with our herd a lot, how cool it is to be in community with people because everyone's a little expert on what's happening with their horse.
Totally.
And there's so much minutia to know about everything. Mm-hmm. And we can only know so much.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you don't want to wait until you need that super specialist or something. And like, that's a huge value in having community and friends you can rely on who have been through that or had to call that specialist
before.
Yeah,
absolutely. And when you do find specialists that you like and you really get along well with them and you admire their work, ask them who they use for other things too. Like, hey, do you ask your horse massage person, like, do you have any equine dentists you really enjoy? Mm. Or have you worked with this vet before? Because if you already resonate with that person and get along with them well and have similar views about horse care, then you'll probably like the professionals they work with too. And as professionals, they sort of understand the industry, right? So it might be a little bit more, and they're more careful to make recommendations. So it might be a better recommendation than say from like the person you just met at the barn. So that's a good thing to do too. Just talk to your professionals and ask about who do they know in the industry? Who do they refer? Get ahead of it. And then think about really, you know, when you're hiring different professionals, really the why, because something about working with equine professionals too is choosing who and when. I mean, sometimes that can be, I wish you guys could see Charlotte's cat right now doing the weirdest little move. You need different people at different time for different reasons, and to be kind of aware of like where they fit into your horse's care routine and all of that is good to think about, again, before you really, really need it too.
I have another question.
Okay.
When, if ever, do you give someone a second chance?
Ooh, that's a good question.
And like, what would that look like? Or are you like, no, never?
I give people second chances if they cancel on me.
Okay.
So if they are not timely in showing up, or if they like cancel our first appointment together last minute, I will give them a second chance because I know how the horse world is. Like, we all just get caught up in horse time, which is not real time.
Definitely.
And drama happens and there's emergency colics and stuff. There's just always something going on. Yes. So I'm really forgiving about that kind of thing. When would I give someone a second chance otherwise? I mean, I guess it depends on the need, like how much the position I'm in, like how much I rely on that, which I try not to. I try not to be in that position where I have to rely on a single person for a single kind of care.
Right.
But I know that's just the case in some places that are more remote.
Yeah. Like, let's say that you had a negative experience, like you didn't like the way a vet handled Juno and was kind of stressing her out.
Mm-hmm.
And in the moment, you didn't say anything. But after, you had the opportunity to say, like, you know, that's not really how I handle my horse. And they said, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, you know, let's work together next time.
Yeah.
Would you still just be like, no? Or would you be like, oh, maybe I just didn't say something soon enough or clarify?
I feel like if any vet gave an apology to me about how they handled my horse, I'd give them a second chance. Like,
that never happens.
That's
a pipe dream. So,
But it would depend on the, it would just depend. I feel like if I was even having, a conversation with someone after the fact, then what they did probably wouldn't have been that bad.
Right.
But like if someone does something very bad, like that is it. Like I'm never speaking to them again.
Right. Because you would have already ended the appointment.
Yeah. So yeah, it depends, but probably in some cases, I don't know. That's not a direct answer.
No, it is a direct answer. That's great. That's very clarifying. I feel like it makes sense to give people a second chance on like the human end of things.
Mm-hmm.
And like within what your comfort level is, but when it comes to human to horse interaction, there's not as much wiggle room.
Yeah. I definitely don't give anyone a second chance who I don't feel like I can communicate with.
Yeah.
Like that's, I just, even if I feel like their work was fine. So like I had a chiropractor recommended to me a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
and he happened to be coming to the barn. I was out with Chino at the time. So I was like, great, I'll get on the appointment, whatever. And he was just the kind of guy that like steamrolled you, who's like just talking at you, talking as if you don't know anything, not even asking questions about,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I was so put off by that. Like, I couldn't, you know, not judging his work or anything like that. I was just like, I'm never hiring this person again. Cause like, I feel like I couldn't get two words in edgewise. And that for me is like such a deal breaker now.
I would be so screwed in that scenario. I am so guilty of ending up in that position and not speaking up for myself, and like catch me 3 hours later still listening to this person's full life story when I was like supposed to be 10 other places. And so that's something I'm working on personally, but I won't call that person again because I know my boundary isn't good enough to deal with them.
Yeah. There you go. You gotta know your boundaries too, and like what you're gonna and not, and yeah, how you, what you're bringing to the relationship with that
exactly
that
what all your stuff, your little baggage
exactly.
that you have is what's in your tiny suitcase today. And like, yeah, totally, you have to, it's not just picking for your horse, it's also picking for you.
Yeah,
you know, obviously your horse first, and you know, we can buck up sometimes and make it work when it is the best care, but I also think there are so many professionals out there that you can find someone that will work for you. But I do, I have such deep sympathy for those of you who are in remote locations and have limited resources in terms of other professionals you can call. And something that our herd member shared with us that was really inspiring, that I think, you know, just in case this idea has never crossed your mind, is maybe you could be that professional.
Yeah.
Like you're seeing the hole, the gap there that's needed. And like you could take the course on barefoot trimming or whatever it is. Like it could be you.
Yeah. There's so many trimmers I know who are like, yeah, I didn't get into this until my horse had a problem and no one could fix it.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think that's great. And empowering yourself to, you know, to educate yourself too and not being intimidated by how vast some of these things can be and how deep the knowledge is, and being vulnerable enough to ask questions in the moment, you know, and really, really push your bet and be like, what does that really mean though? And like, what does it really mean if we do this? And what about that? And can you write that down? And can I get a picture of that?
Exactly. I already told Easton, the leader, I'm like, I think I'm going to like put my phone on record for the whole bodywork session so I don't miss anything.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you really, I think that's something that I've definitely learned is that to just let my like inner inquisitive child who's like, but why? Like just be that kid when you're in those scenarios.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like, even though you think, oh, this person doesn't, like, it can be really refreshing to the professional to be able to talk about it. And, you know, if you're working with somebody that you like and who is good to your horse, they're probably really passionate about what they do.
Yeah.
And they're probably excited to tell you about their life and what they learned and what that journey is and why they think and feel the things they do about horse care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And how awesome to like get to learn from those kinds of people.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Like in an ideal world, like those people are going to be your friends, your mentors, people you can rely on, people you can call in emergency, like they're your extended community.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's so great. Okay, well, I think it's time for a rapid fire to wrap up this episode on equine professionals. And I'm asking you first, Charlotte.
Great.
Okay, if you're going to go into a different equine-related profession, since Charlotte is an animal communicator, which counts, what would it be?
Great question. I really think a part of me, if I had the time and money, I would want to go to vet school.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. best white lie to tell to get out of an appointment with a professional?
Ooh. Something came up with my other animal.
Okay, good one. If you could choose a celebrity to be your vet, who would it be?
Oh my God, great question. To be my vet? I think I would pick, oh my God. The one that's coming to my mind right now is Dolly Parton.
That's an amazing answer. I want Dolly Parton as my vet too. Okay, well, you kind of already answered this one, but vet school or farrier apprentice?
Ooh. Honestly, like, the one that sounds more fun is Farrier's Apprentice. Okay. So I think that would be more, like, realistic.
Saddle fitter or saddle maker?
Saddle maker. I would love to know how.
It'd be really fun to do all that tooling. Okay, barter with chickens or barter with beer?
Ooh, beer.
Okay, great. That's what I got.
Good questions. Okay. Not including the vet or the farrier, who's the next most important professional? You.
Not including the vet or the farrier. Oh, trainer.
Great answer. Okay. Ballpark. How many different professionals has Juno seen since you've had her in your life?
Oh my God. Wow. Okay. I all cut out some of the paws. I just count my fingers. So let's see. 10 farriers.
Wow.
At least, that I can remember. At least 4 vets. And then that's kind of the most, because I haven't done a lot of like chiropractic work or body work. 1 dentist, 1 chiropractor, 1 almost 2 body workers now.
That's so interesting. And like thinking about the years you've had her, that's like a farrier every like year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of them were I was with a long time, some of them with a very short time. one time only.
Oh, okay, I have a similar question to one you asked me, but what equine profession, this is kind of 2 parts, what equine profession would you want to pursue the most and which the least?
Oh gosh, good question. I think dentistry the least. Uh-huh. I do not want my hands up in a horse's mouth. I just don't. It's very fascinating. Their teeth are cool to look at, but I don't think I'd want to do it. It's hard. I don't know. Maybe body work, you know? Mm. I think it would be really cool to learn more about their movement and all the different intricacies and how everything's connected and be able to, like, heal through your hands. That's just a really amazing power, honestly.
So agree, and it's so, not to double this word, but so empowering to be able to help without any other tool than just your own body, too.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Okay. Fresh out of school or super seasoned?
Super seasoned.
Chatty or quiet?
Chatty, I guess.
On time or affordable?
Oh, God. Honestly, on time.
I know.
I'll take both, but yeah, on time.
You don't get both. Let us tell you.
So much time wasted waiting around for the professionals to come on over, but yep. That's okay. Oh, good questions. Well, good conversation. I hope for anyone listening that this was, you know, helpful for you. And it's such an interesting part of being a horse owner is that we come into contact with all of these professionals in a way we don't with our cats or our dogs or, you know, other animals in our lives. So
totally. I hope if nothing else, at least you can relate and laugh along with us at the wacky wild journey it takes to be a good caretaker and guardian for your horse.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Heart Horse is the equestrian community you've always longed for. One where we celebrate and support the unique relationship we each have with our horses. Membership starts at just $20 a month, with an option to receive our carefully curated bi-monthly Heart Horse box. Get started at hearthorse.us and don't forget to follow us on Instagram @_hearthorse for the latest news.